Hello, and welcome to another episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. The following is a fireside chat we held with Sasha Guy Newland, CEO of Battleface, back in June of 2021. Battleface is a scale-up insurtech venture out of the US that's trying to tackle travel insurance for the modern age. In this conversation with Sasha, I talked to him about people, culture, and how to scale in a world post-COVID. Hope you enjoy it. Excellent. I'm just going to give a few seconds for people to kind of drift into the room. Welcome to this session of Nothing Ventured. That's a new name for this series of firesides and podcasts that we've been building over the last couple of months. Really super excited to have Sasha Guy Newland, who is the CEO of Battleface, which is a scale-up insurtech business focused on the travel tech sector. Really excited to be talking about a number of things, both from his journey kind of someone who I think, in my opinion, has lived the American dream all the way through to kind of scaling a tech venture. So if we give it a good sort of 30 seconds, maybe let a few people drift in. Say hello. There is a chat room available. Please do say hello. If you've got any questions, feel free to ask them in that chat box, and we will pick those up towards the end of the session. Obviously, if there's something that's interesting, whilst we're talking, we'll certainly try and pick it up in the flow. But as I say, first of all, thank you so much, Sasha, for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome. Excited to be here.
Excellent. Awesome. So I think let's kick off. So I think first off the bat, it would be great to understand, Sasha, because you've lived, I think, a really, really interesting life. You've had a great journey. I mentioned earlier that you seem to be someone who's kind of really lived the American dream. It'd be great to understand kind of your background, how you came to be doing what you're doing, but like your journey from, I think, Russia originally to the US and then beyond, because I think that's truly inspirational given the kind of world we've been living in the last 12, 18 months to kind of understand that journey.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. So, originally I come from Russia. I grew up in Russia. I went to high school there, of course. And when I was 16, I had an opportunity to go to the United States, Stevens Point, Wisconsin, on the exchange student program with a high school in Stevens Point. I guess I just never exchanged back to Russia because I had an opportunity after I've gone through a year of high school in Stevens Point to actually go to University of Wisconsin through a scholarship program that was given to me by Travel Guard, back then, the first travel insurance company in North America that was actually built out right from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And as part of the scholarship, I was going full-time to university and then also working at Travel Guard in their operations customer service center. So that's how it actually got me into travel insurance as well altogether.
Yeah, so your journey started like super early. Effectively, you've been in that travel tech, travel insurance kind of space since day one. I mean, incredible that you're able to come over as an exchange student and then get sponsored through university whilst also having a job and effectively something that seems like it's probably defined a fair amount of the direction in your life since then. So it'd be great to understand kind of the journey then from those early days through to where you are now at Battleface, because I know you've been through quite a few kind of iterations within the travel insurance industry. Mm-hmm. And just to give a bit of background, because I think, I think insurance is something we all understand and put up with and maybe actually we put up with but don't necessarily understand particularly well, but it'd be great kind of to see, because clearly that's a journey that you've taken over the last 10 20 plus years, I guess. How have things evolved? How have things changed? What kind of caused the move to setting up Battleface, right? What drove that? Because presumably there was a pain point that you saw that wasn't being addressed.
Right. So yeah, certainly. I mean, Travel Guard actually gave me an amazing exposure to building out international companies. And when I joined Travel Guard back in 1999, Travel Guard was a very small family-owned operation started by an entrepreneur, John Noel. Actually, a true American story. The company was started in the basement of his house. And John was extremely innovative when it came to creating products, working with customers, and actually identifying opportunities right in front of him. And I had the luxury to work side by side with him and his founding team that started TravelGuard. And quickly, because it was such an open landscape, when I started to work at TravelGuard, my passion was always around working with people and helping people in and out of different situations. And TravelGuard at the time, and still is actually, I think, received a contract from American Express to handle all of the emergency travel, medical, and assistance services 24/7 on behalf of American Express customers in the United States. And I jumped on right away into that program where at any given time, 24/7, customers would be calling in for help, sending cash wires or sending an airplane to pick them up in the most obscure location and transfer them back home. And I found that job extremely fascinating because every phone call was different. And then I was able to use my, I guess, not my educational skills, maybe, but primarily my international skills, like how to get things done. Because growing up in Russia, of course, you know, it's a bit different from if you grow up in the United States. So it was kind of, it was fun. And our department was very international as well. TravelGuard and John were so good in attracting anyone that spoke any other language in the area. And so, you know, I was sitting next to Bo, for example, who was from Ivory Coast, or next to Miguel, who's from Mexico. And we all were solving these problems at any given time on behalf of travelers. And eventually TravelGuard started to grow their own products, travel insurance products. And my passion continued on to building out emergency medical assistance and claims operations worldwide on behalf of TravelGuard. So at any time you buy travel insurance, the most crucial part of travel insurance is your ability to call somebody in the event of emergency and get that help. And that's what I ended up doing for decades, I guess. Well, that's kind of crazy to say, but yeah, for years and years. And eventually TravelGuard was bought by AIG, and with AIG I was doing the exact same thing, building out their global operations throughout Latin America, Asia, Europe, United States, Canada. And so I knew, and still do know, travel insurance at its weakest and most strongest points. Because I got to deal with travel insurance, and still do, from the emergency medical assistance side. And so you see there what works, what doesn't work at any given time, especially when you're trying to help people. And you see if the policy is actually a good policy, or a product, or a benefit. Was it the right policy that consumers purchased for their trip? And primarily, most what we started to see as a shift in the travel industry before we started battle phase is that many travelers were traveling with products that were not working for them.
So and that's really interesting. I think you and I talked about this, especially during COVID times, that kind of need for very, very personalized kind of packages with insurance. And I think this is a general trend that I see throughout technology businesses across all spectrums, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, et cetera, right? And presumably travel tech and travel and insurtech are no different. That kind of need to move towards a very hyper-personalized offering to an individual, right? So I gave you the example, I think, in the past of my daughter who was traveling to Costa Rica, was meant to travel to Costa Rica, required very specific cover to be able to go out there, but obviously because here in the UK we're on the Costa Rica was on the amber list, insurers were basically saying, well, we'll cover you but not if you're on the amber list, right? So mm-hmm. so there was a very kind of blanket approach and no sort of exception. So from your learnings from that kind of prior experience within those bigger insurance firms, how do you structure something like Battleface to be able to deal with those hype? Because one of the issues I guess I would imagine exists is that, yes, individuals require that more tailored package, and therefore your ability to offer that tailored package is going to be really vital. But as a small player, your ability to offer that package is going to be compromised by your A, access to the cover, but also B, your kind of scale in terms of data and being able to figure out what is the best combination of covers. So how do you tackle that in the early days of Battleface? Like, how do you basically go from a, we know that this is a problem, to this is, you know, this is how we're going to solve it? I mean, like, obviously iteration along the way, I'm sure, but what was the kind of trigger point? What were the main trigger points there, I guess?
It's a massive problem to solve as a startup, and trying to dissect the, I guess, the massive industry as well, travel insurance industry globally. It's a $40 billion industry, and it's growing really rapidly. And there's a lot of players within the space. And I think at the time when we were starting Battleface, we were responding to many, many requests of travelers going into different destinations around the world, and specific to journalists, for example. Because the media industry has gone through full-time model to a freelance model. And as part of your contract with BBC or CNN, you're responsible to have your own travel insurance. And of course, as typical of a journalism, you do a lot of investigation and you look into what type of products you're purchasing. And journalists identified right away that 95% of the products out there are just not suitable for what they were doing, and they need that travel insurance. And the problem was that we were solving at the time is, how can we create products that could be purchased on the go, fast, easy, with a tech platform that could issue policies right away for travelers that are not your standard travelers, so to speak, because the entire travel insurance industry was already isolating the freelance crowd out of the tourism industry, or anyone who fell out of the standard passenger model, which travel insurance was created 30, 40 years ago with Travel Guard, for example, or companies like Travel Guard. Back then, that was a model that was controlled by travel agencies, for example. So you would distribute the product through a travel agency. And each market is different, but in the United States, for example, most travelers back then were going for 2 weeks, and primarily products have been created to protect your financial investment against the trip cost, and not you as a traveler. And that's how these products are still are created in the industry, and that's actually as a global phenomena. So our goal was to identify a solution to create a platform that would allow to create products based on you as a traveler and your needs. And we went to Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's of London is one of the most innovative marketplaces in the insurance world.
Well, created insurance originally, I guess, right?
Exactly. So
the original innovator.
Yeah, exactly. And good for us, because we all come from the insurance industry, it's easy to have that conversation. So we were actually having a discussion, an intelligent conversation with different underwriters. And it turns out that a lot of insurance companies are very, very keen on getting into the space of personalized attention for creating the right products at the right price, and where you can take into consideration destination changes, because what I think the biggest issue within the travel insurance industry is the commodity one size fits all product that no longer works. So if you, and from the underwriting perspective, you know, a 20-pound policy destination United States or a 20-pound policy destination Vietnam makes no sense, because we all know that the medical cost in the United States is much, much higher than it is in Vietnam. So from an underwriting perspective, these products no longer work. There's no financial profitability. And on top of it, distribution is really expensive. Airlines, large travel agencies, big, big players, they charge insurance companies a lot of money to distribute these products, between 60 to 70% in some instances. So insurance companies are left only with this much to actually be innovative process claims, and that's why you see a lot of exclusions in these products. And they're very,
and
very
also,
limited products.
And also presumably kind of stifles some of the innovation because it's seen as a low kind of margin product. So not worth the while to try and sort of fix some of those inherent problems, right? Because basically they don't see the value in them. Whereas actually, if they fix some of those problems, they may see their margins increase and therefore the actual total lifetime value of that policy might improve for them. That's super interesting. I'd like to kind of move from like the product, as it were, to the experience of scaling Battleface. So you guys raised the Series A, you know, not so long ago, in the midst of a pandemic. So congratulations. So I'd really love to understand a few things. First of all, kind of what trick, like, so as a founder, as a CEO, how did you make the decision that the Series A was required, right? So I think there's a lot of our audience is here in the UK and Europe, and I think there's a big difference in venture in the US versus here in the UK, Europe. We see UK, Europe being much more skewed towards growth and sort of private equity almost compared to venture. So there's a lower risk appetite. So I presume in the US, you know, maybe there's better appetite for earlier stage. But what were the trigger points that led you to moving towards your Series A? And it'd be great to understand, rather than kind of like the success, but what were the real challenges within that, you know, trying to raise during a pandemic, presumably with a remote team, presumably with, you know, Zoom kind of pitches, all of that sort of stuff. What was your experience of that? And it'd be great, I think, for our audience to understand the pain points that you went through whilst trying to raise.
Sure. Well, raising money is always like, it's probably the most challenging aspect of it. And trying to, it's like a friend of mine told me, like, there's a lot of frogs you have to kiss before you get to the final outcome. And of course, a seed round helped a lot because a seed was the most challenging one. I mean, to begin with, we had the luxury of being part of Tangiers International. Battleface was born out of a successful company environment where we had the luxury of actually the time of putting the plans together, putting our systems in place, develop the relationships with Lloyd's of London. And Tangiers has been an incredible support system and foundation for Battleface. And then eventually, of course, as we knew that Battleface is going to be taken off, we wanted to take the company into the fundraising mode and start raising money from the seed stage. And once seed was the hardest, because you have to convince, back then before COVID-19, travel insurance was viewed as nuisance, right? It's there's a lot of players out there. You'll never get in the airline.com space because you're a startup, it's very expensive. And how are you gonna make a difference? And what is your selling proposition? And back then, before COVID-19, there's so much unknown about travel insurance. And so in selling that story was quite difficult until we found our princess, I guess, and the prince. And so we had FinTech Ventures Fund and Greenlight Reinsurance running our seed round. And Greenlight Reinsurance, for example, comes from the insurance background. And we were dealing with their innovations team. And they saw an opportunity right away, and they gave us that start. And then, of course, COVID-19 happens. Everything just stops. And when we were building Battleface, we were building it from the premise of the whole world changes all the time. And so how can you create products and deliver products that are relevant to today's travelers? Because, by the way, back to 1999, and Travel Guard and AIG days, those are the still exact same products that I was trained on that are being sold in the industry. And we all know that in the last 20 years, the industry changed, travel industry changed, the way we travel, who travels, where we go, what we do changed. Airbnb alone disrupted the hotel industry. And there is absolutely no innovation that's coming out of travel insurance side of things. So then, of course, COVID-19 happens, and then media comes. Media it has done a really good job of exposing the problems within the travel insurance industry. I still remember that article from New York Times headline: "Travel insurance, is it worth it?" And the answer is no. The way it is, it's absolutely not. It's worthless. to ever-changing environment in the world. So as soon as there is an event, it becomes an exclusion. And when you take a look at the policies, war and terrorism exclusion, number one, pandemic exclusion, number two, and the list just goes on and on and on. And
act of God, which act of God, which basically is like anything, right? So
yeah, I wonder if somebody like actually just calls and tries to verify what the act of God is. But yeah, it's anything like that. And certainly exclusions need to be there. But some of the day-to-day things, for example, terrorism, right? So you're drinking coffee in Berlin and there's a terrorist attack, there's a chance that your travel insurance policy that you have might exclude you because it's one of the exclusions. So then we get to the Series A stage. And this is where we are getting to the stage of hyper growth. We're growing really fast. Consumers discovered us last year and they loved it. They loved the concept and the ease of the platform. And we see Battleface taking off quite rapidly. And we're discovering the problem globally, not just in the UK market, not just in the US market. It's an international problem. And of course, at this stage, we've met a lot of, it's through networks and Greenlight, for example, actually was introducing us to different investors for our next stage. And then within the network of our own, for example, Root Insurance, one of the successful companies here in Columbus, Ohio, that was Drive Capital invested in, one of their employees referred us over to Drive Capital as we were having a conversation. And certainly this is all, there's different ways of getting to the VC, getting in touch in front of the VCs through conferences, through networks, through introductions, and keeping in touch as well as you grow. Because, for example, I've spoken to so many VCs that see this too early for them, but Series B, for example, is their sweet spot. So you just keep telling your story until you get to that point. And what really worked for us, and of course every experience is different, is concentrate on what we're good at and what we're not good at, or what our weaknesses are. In the Series A stage, that's what we started to concentrate on, what our weaknesses are and what type of partner we need to have on board who can help us to solve those weaknesses and get to the market faster.
So you actually looked for a strategic investor then, by the sounds of it, because I think there's like this, there's this trope within venture or certainly within startup world that like any money is good enough. And I kind of have a balanced view of that. I think, you know, capital is always, when you need capital, you take capital, but I think there are definitely sources that you would rather not have taken from in hindsight and sources that you would definitely want to take from because they can add that strategic value. But it sounds like you made the very conscious decision to look for a strategic investor as opposed to like any kind of money, right? And is that because of the nature, not just of the businesses and the weaknesses you talked about, but just the nature of the industry? Because I perceive it as being quite a closed industry, and therefore as a startup, you are really trying to, you know, battle against a couple of hundred years worth of legacy here. Was that kind of the rationale behind that, or was it purely because of the weaknesses, the perceived weaknesses in the business that you wanted to address?
I guess a mix of both. Of course, when you're at the seed stage, where at first I was looking for money. It's like I felt like I was just like running around with an empty bag because we needed the money to. But then I received really good advice from a friend of mine who said, just look for someone who actually will add value and concentrate on the value aspect of it. And once I started to rethink my approach, then this is where Greenlight came in and FinTech Ventures Fund, where actually there was a lot of value add. And second, this is my personality. I look for personalities. I look for a connection. I look for an easy relationship. My aunt that's been married 5 times, she always said relationships need to be easy. So and that's still in my brain. And so and we've been lucky because both from Tangiers to fintech to Greenlight to now Drive Capital, the relationships that we have with our investors are just incredible. We go to them with problems all the time, and that's the key as well. It's like, how do you actually look for a partner who can help you solve problems, and how can you have an honest conversation? When I was pitching Drive Capital, so many smart, intelligent questions were thrown at me. It was like in the auditorium, and some of the terminology that I've never heard before, like LTV, for example. I don't know what that is, but you know, and I was upfront about that, or unit economics, because everything that was built at Battleface was based on intuition and customers' needs, and we know the customer really well, but we don't know, for example, what product means in a tech company. So when I was asked, do you have a product team? My immediate response was, yeah, of course we have an underwriter who creates products, but that's a completely different environment, right? And so when I was walking away from Drive Capital, I was thinking, okay, well, I didn't know half of the answers to their questions. So probably, let's see, you know, like, because at that point, I was interested in someone to help us to actually grow. And Drive came back right away and said, that was the most exciting part for us, because we know that you're really good at travel insurance. You know travel insurance in and out, and we're good at building out tech companies, engineering teams, product teams, finance teams. That's another term, FP&A. I had no idea what that stood for. Now we have a director of FP&A, and it's an amazing change that took place in the company, in the development, and we started to grow even faster and bigger and more ambitious, and that really, those conversations really help. So my advice would be to know your strength. Of course, that's what attracts people, but then connect with VCs based on your weaknesses as well, and where do you need help.
That's a really interesting and quite nuanced kind of piece of advice, right? Because the first thing that one has to do is identify that one has weaknesses and admit to oneself that you have those weaknesses. It's really interesting when you talked about the kind of unit economics and the LTV and that sort of stuff. Obviously, you know, we're heavily involved in the kind of finance stuff. Well, I'm very heavily involved in the finance side of ventures. And there is this shift happening from the kind of old school way of looking at P&L balance sheet, et cetera, towards these sort of more venture driven metrics, which, you know, a lot of which were kind of espoused in the kind of lean startup methodologies and so on. Right. But actually what's really interesting then is that how do you then shift your kind of hiring pattern from, you know, trying to build an insurance business to building a tech business, like, because that sounds like the pivot you effectively had to go through internally post Series A or during that Series A to move from, as you said, like a very traditionally product focused business to a scaling tech product focused venture, and therefore the teams that you need to build can be quite difficult. So could you talk through kind of your and because we've also, you know, you've mentioned in the past when we've spoken about how important culture is, but how have you driven the people side of the business? How has that scaled as you've scaled? How are you looking at that? What's important? Where are the challenges? Because again, global, remote, pandemic, etc. How is that all working for Battleface now?
Well, it's certainly interesting question. How do you build a company, especially in these times, and a global company, and a very well-connected company? Again, luckily, we had a fortune of having some amazing, talented people join us from operational perspective to engineering side of things, and product and finance, and enthusiasm is extremely high within the company, and the morale. Immediately, you know, our reaction was to go to people that we know first. So a lot of talented team members joined from the travel insurance industry, so that could pick up the growth that we were going through. So, for example, A friend of mine that I used to work with at AIG, Sophia, she's based in Rome and she speaks five different languages and she knows customers in and out and travel insurance in and out. And she is a problem solver. And she jumped right away on the phone. And there is not enough, you don't need to spend too much time on training, right? And development. And that's how we've built our operations team. Francisca, Sophia, Linda, everyone just joined and helped us to build the operational side of things. Then Anthony, who's based in Malta and actually moving over to Columbus now, our CTO has been building out an engineering team between Columbus and Europe. And in fact, actually, Drive, this is where Drive came in and helped us quite a bit with different referrals and introductions. And they've referred us to a few very successful recruiters as well in different parts of, actually, specifically in Columbus. So, for example, we're working with Lou, who was one of the recruiters that was referred to us, who specifically concentrates on building out engineering teams and within the Columbus area or within Ohio, and helped us to really get our team off the ground. And then eventually we started to build out teams based on the need. Then the same with finance, same with product. And at that time, or especially at this time, another interesting point that that we started to explore with, we know a lot about travel insurance, but now we need to add talent from different industries. And this is where the diversity comes in, of diversity of thought. And how can you apply different industries towards to what we're doing and towards to the problems that we're trying to solve. And then communication, of course. We have regular check-ins. We work with each other regularly. And then going back to the my aunt's concept, personality and ease of relationships, that's extremely important in order for you to survive in this culture from startup environment, plus remote environment, plus the global environment. You have to be pretty agnostic as a person and diverse to all different cultures and backgrounds and personalities. And you have to have a easygoing kind of personality to actually be able to have a relationship with people that you're working with. And we had a few weeks ago, we had our first in-person meeting in Columbus with the management team. And half of the team never met before, in person. So, but it was the personalities were incredibly kind of matching so well
Yeah, so
that there was no friction.
there was a gel in the culture that you'd kind of
Yeah.
created via both kind of hiring as well as the practices managing remote teams,
Yeah.
I guess, or managing remotely. And couple of like sort of quicker fire questions, I guess, within this as well. I mean, you're on your scaling journey now, so growth is clearly the target. But what is the kind of so what is your target? So like a lot of ventures that we work with, as an example, will have, a one thing that they're really hyper focused on. And that one thing is never revenue, because revenue is the wrong thing to look at. For your business, what is that one thing? What is the thing that you are really obsessed about, that you want to make sure every day you're beating every single kind of goal or objective that you had? What is that one thing?
We have many things, but one thing is how you actually concentrate on growth. And then, of course, going back to the customer, we have our principles, and number one principle is continuing to create relevant experience and products to our customers. So even in the battle phase world, I don't want to be in a position where in 20 years somebody says, when I started a battle phase, they're still selling the exact same products. So that's an overarching kind of theme of the company, is to continue to create relevant products for our customers. And our mission is to create a global travel insurance company that's able to solve those problems. At the moment, in terms of our day-to-day thinking, of course, how do you scale and how do you concentrate on growth? Because for example, my personal background comes from concentration on EBITDA and profitability and budgets. And how do you run cost-effective operations? And so even myself, I had to go through a mind shift of concentrating on growth and scale. And that was that was a big challenge coming out of the environment where you are, you know, responding to the need and deliver and work, and especially with so many points within the travel insurance space, because you're trying to convince big insurance companies to support you as a startup, and you need, of course, in their world, they're not coming from the growth environment, they're coming from the profitability revenue environment. How are you going to generate gross written premiums for us to continue to provide you with that support?
Yeah.
And so in the insurance world, of course, it's another thing is one single claim could kill your entire business plan, especially as a startup. So you need to have that balance. And so it's a tough situation to be in as a startup in the insurance world, because from one hand, you need to deliver the results for the insurance companies that are supporting you from the revenue perspective. And on the other side, you need to concentrate on growth and building out an infrastructure that can scale and scale faster.
Yeah, I think that's a typical problem within fintech, where you need both stability with the growth and decoupling the mindset from like, okay, yes, to your point, growing an EBITDA positive business to a growth engine, which may, you know, scale faster than it makes profit, is really, really, really tough. And you know, it's for someone, and I come from a similar kind of background where I come from a family business background, which is very much like you focus on positive bottom line and like slow and steady rather than kind of scale and growth. I can imagine that's quite difficult. And how do you see the travel? So just kind of moving away from the scale question a little bit, but travel obviously has gone through a huge shift. I just saw a report this morning that passenger numbers have now recovered to 75%, but there's a question mark as to how sustainable and whether that is the peak or whatever. How do you see travel kind of shifting as we move forward? I mean, one of the things I think is almost certainly going to happen is a move towards, again, more tailored experiences and more premium experiences. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd love to understand from your perspective, where do you see things going?
I think travel is just going to continue. It's going to be one of the industries that is going to continue to expand really, really fast. And I've seen this from September 11th days. But of course, in the United States level only, not at the global side. September 12th, the entire industry was shut. And then within a month, then you started to see huge growth months over months over months on both travel industry and travel insurance side of things. So I think it's the right report. And based on our experience as well with customers, there's a big preempt demand on travel. And not just for, you know, laying on the beach crushing coconuts perspective, but also visiting family, going to see friends, getting out of your home environment, dreaming that travel, that trip, that vacation. I think leisure travel is probably going to be fast on recovery versus to business travel, because obviously we're getting used to this relationship on the over Zoom and video. But I think business even will be picking up as well, because there is a need for the face-to-face interaction and solving problems like we used to do pre-COVID-19. And but yeah, travel industry as a whole, I think will be recovering, one of the industries that will be recovering pretty fast.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I agree. I'm traveling shortly. I think you described it earlier as revenge travel. I think that I think that's a great term. I mean, it's not quite the same. We're going out to see my in-laws, but I do think, you know, for those of us that have been used to traveling, I know you've traveled a huge amount in your time. For those of us that are used to kind of traveling, experiencing different cultures, you tend to appreciate then the ability to do that more, and therefore you're from one of the from one of the audience. So it's actually very specific, like dealing with payroll compliance issues. We'll kind of segregate that from the actual question. So did you open up foreign subsidiaries to hire international talent, or do you work kind of on a more loose basis? And I've seen both kind of sides of that in various sort of sizes of scale, but what kind of decision did you guys make?
Yeah, we go with the direct employment model. We did open operations in the UK and Belgium, thanks to Brexit, and different countries as well. And there are different models out there. Either, you know, I think there's different companies out there that excel in employment of record model, right, where you can subcontract that entire function. And there's great companies out there. We just couldn't afford them. From our perspective. So, and for us to figure out international compliance, logistics, regulatory environment is not that difficult because that's what we come from that background. So we've taken the route of, for example, registering our Belgium entity in Europe within European countries like Spain or Italy in order for us to, or Malta to employ people locally. Then in the UK, of course, we have a full operation that's FCA regulated and registered, and we employ people in the UK. US is another function. Soon we're going to be looking into Australia, and that will require us to register a company and do the everything locally from compliance. And on top of it, insurance is very regulated as well. So
yeah.
So there's a lot of compliance that go into it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And Radu, I can also let you know that we are going to have the CEO founder of Omnipresent, which is one of these employer record businesses, which is scaling very quickly. We're going to have them on the Nothing Ventured podcast in the future. So do stay tuned for that. And of course, more than happy to make the introduction, Sasha.
Maybe he can give us a discount.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we can work something out for sure. So just as we kind of wrap things up, I'll see if there's any other questions come through. Please do feel free to drop anything else in there. But Sasha, just like moving things onto both a personal as well as a kind of business level, but if you could let our audience know sort of what is the main thing at a personal level that you kind of focus on to ensure that, you know, you're able to bring balance to what you do in your role as CEO of Battleface, and then equally at Battleface, what is the one challenge that you wish you had kind of thought of earlier or tried to solve earlier in the piece, or has been, you know, the real kind of problematic one for you? Because I think it's always, it's very easy to skim over where the pain happened, like, because we all want to hear the success stories, of course, right? But was there one thing where you were like, geez, this is going to really jeopardize our ability to even move forward? So two questions there. You know, at a personal level, what keeps you kind of sane, and what do you do? Yeah. And at the business, what was that one challenge?
Personal level, I guess it's certainly having relationships with everyone you're working with and being upfront about all the struggles, because I think the biggest in the leadership roles, you try to naturally shield away everything that's negative, right, from the employees and everyone you're working with, and just only deliver the positive. And I don't know, somewhere in the, I would never admit to it, but I guess I am now, somewhere in LinkedIn, one of those cheesy messages that people post. I saw that somebody saying that was a life-changing experience when they started to be upfront about both positive and negative. And kind of like, and same concept in terms of how we work with our venture capital partners, solving problems together, and that definitely helped me on the personal level, because I'm learning a lot more about myself and about the problems, about what we're trying to solve, and just being upfront. Of course, it doesn't solve all the problems out there, but at least that's something that I think keeps me going, and it makes it easier to work in a startup environment when you're constantly in the open about everything that's happening around you. And whether you like it or not, personal lives also matter as well. And they do become become part of the startup as well. So we take very, very cautious approach that you and your family and personal life is first, right? And then we figure out everything else after. So that's very important as well. And that's just not for me, but everyone that works at Battleface is, that becomes as a priority. And second question, I wish I guess that it depends on the day you're talking to me. Right? So I think sure. The overall arching is how you can take control over what you do in your decision-making. That's key. And then in travel insurance world specifically, that's, you got to think back to the customer, right? From the start of the purchase of the policy to the end of the experience. And how can you be in control of the decision-making and, or have partners that you know will not bail on you, quote unquote, because like I mean, we're still relying on a support of some amazing insurance companies from around the world. But travel insurance, for example, for in a company that is $50 billion in gross written premium, for them, travel insurance could be so small as a line of business. You really right. need to have your case, right? So finding the right partners, I think, is going to be key in everything you do. So not just like in the VC world, even when if you're starting an insurance company or an insurance technology company, don't just take the first kind of like, yes, we're going to support you answer, because you want to make sure that the partner you're choosing is going to be in the long haul with you. Because we've gone through, even with us in our experience and our contacts, we've gone through a lot of insurance companies that that were there to support us, but when actually we became to the innovation side, they were not there to help us. So some of that is, I wish I knew before.
No, that's amazing. So, I mean, I think the one takeaway from this whole conversation, that's the theme that's run through everything that you said, I think, Sasha, and it's something that I 100% subscribe to and definitely talk about, is the value of relationships, the importance of those relationships. So you've talked about them at a personal level, within the team building, making sure that you've built teams where relationships sit at the heart of them, that you're able to talk kind of openly and upfront with each other, communicate well with each other, and that can only happen if you've got the right relationships. And then as you said, both with your investors as well as the kind of partners within the industry, relationships are key because they make and break the business. So I think that's a really solid piece of advice. And I think, unfortunately, in the kind of blitz scale world of venture growth, a lot of businesses tend to deprioritize those relationships or treat those relationships mm-hmm. potentially with a kind of cavalier attitude and end up actually stifling their own growth because they treat everything too transactionally. I think everything needs to be kind of looked at from a long-term perspective. I don't think there's any more questions. So I'd like to just kind of close off by saying, thank you so much, Sasha, for joining us today. Really appreciate your time. It's been great having you here. For those of you that are listening, we will be kind of broadcasting this both as a podcast as well as on YouTube. So you will get a chance to catch up on any bits that you may have missed. If there's things that you would like to ask, please do feel free to kind of post a comment or reach out certainly to me on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn or Twitter, ADS in UK. Sasha, where's the best place for people to find you if they're looking for you?
Battleface.com.
Battleface.com. Look, really, really wonderful having you here. Thanks again, Sasha. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was nice having a chat.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Ventured, an Emerge One production. As always, we'd love to get your feedback on our conversations, your thoughts, as well as topics or guests you'd love to hear from. Drop us a line on social media or via one of the links in the show notes. But for now, be well, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of Nothing Ventured soon. I mean, what have you got to lose, right?